there's nothing that it can't be, really. You'd almost have to invent it if it didn't exist for its flexibility. And people are even using it in desserts, of course, with maple bacon dessert. It's got way more to offer than most people realise.
Welcome to this episode of Australian Pork's podcast, Next on the Menu. Our podcast is a curation of conversations on the future of food, and we'll be exploring our guest perspectives on innovations that will change the world of food as we know it. I'm Mitch Edwards, a longtime supporter of the Australian pork sector, and joining me today as co-host is none other than Andrew Billy Baxter, Chair of Australian Pork. Welcome, Billy.
Thanks, Mitch. Good to be here and really looking forward to this episode.
It's going to be good. On today's episode of Next on the Menu, we have the fabulous Brodie Meyer Cook. Brodie is the editor-in-chief of taste.com.au and bestrecipes.com.au, Australia's most successful food brands. Brodie has successfully launched several sub-brands, including taste.com.au's health platforms. Brodie has received numerous accolades, such as Brand of the Year in 2019 for taste.com.au and Journalist Producer of the Year in 2016 at the B&T Women in Media Awards. In today's world, the media influences all that we do and think as consumers. Even TikTok has changed the game from feta pasta, which caused a global shortage, to making us drink chlorophyll water. So I am absolutely stoked to hear all consumer trends and demands from your perspective, Brodie. So honey, welcome to Next on the Menu podcast.
Hi guys, thank you for having me.
Now, first, Brodie, before we kick into it, what sparked your passion for food and journalism?
Well, I was a journalist first, and then I became a horticulturalist. And weirdly, I came into food sideways. I came in through actually being editor of Gardening Australia, and they needed a mat leave appointment on a food mag, and they said, "You're it." And I kind of pushed back, to be honest, weird to think now. That was back in 2006, and I'm still there. From the first day, absolutely loved what I was doing, and would have kicked up a stink if they tried to push me back there. So I think I landed in the right place at the right time.
Absolutely, and running one of the biggest food on-site platforms in the world.
Yes, well, definitely the biggest in Australia and per capita.
Go the world.
Let's go the universe. I think it probably is per capita the biggest food platform in the world. But, yeah, it's certainly well-loved and much visited by Aussies everywhere.
So, Brodie, what are you currently seeing in your key publications? Like, what are consumers demanding and what are the trends you're seeing coming through?
Well, first of all, the word demanding is perfect for right now. I think we have never had a more demanding consumer across all of food. I'm sure restaurants are feeling it too. There's that functional stuff. I guess if you look through the home cooking lens, there's the whole functional stuff. They're demanding value. They're demanding things be really good for time. They don't want to waste any time. They don't want to waste any money. They want us to take all the hard work, all the choices and decisions. There's a lot of energy that goes into that that they want us to relieve. So that's kind of, I guess, the functional side. But then what I'm finding exciting about right now is they want adventures and experiences. And you talked about feta pasta.
Yeah.
TikTok, all of that. And I think, look, you brought up the plant food thing. And I think a lot of that has actually been driven mainly by curiosity. It kind of reached its peak actually in 2019, and it's been actually plateauing since then. Vegan's actually dropping back a little bit. So it's interesting that curiosity drives a lot of things in food, and I think that was one of them. It's still there, but not as huge and definitely not rising as much as it was.
What about on top of all of that, what sort of individual food trends, you know, because, you know, you might have some years it might be all about a certain type of pasta as we talked about, but what are the sort of individual food trends at the moment? What's hot, what's not?
Yeah, look, I can't tell you how many times and for how many years people have said, "What's the new kale?" I think they've finally stopped asking that, thank God. But I think the new kale is actually appliances. It's less to do with individual ingredients and more to do with how people are cooking. We went from pie maker to air fryer. Air fryer is just, it's hard to even tell you how huge air fryer is. So I think it's really down that line as much as anything else. And then apart from that, there's things like one pan and things that are attached to that value for money, value for time equation. Slow cookers, I didn't mention them. Huge, even in summer, like top search term, like Christmas Day. People have got the slow cooker bubbling away instead of their oven, I guess. There's lots of different things happening in food right now, but they're the key ones, I think, that are most worth highlighting.
Well, yeah, the air fryer, because just it obviously is quite big. What with our pork hats on, is there anything good pork-wise we can throw in the air fryer?
Well, and I'm not just saying this, my favourite air fryer recipe that we've ever done, air fryer pork belly. Oh. It's like you have to, everybody, stop what you're doing. Go to taste.com.au. Just Google it. It'll come up as number one. Put in video air fryer pork belly, taste.com.au. It'll come straight up and just start drooling. It's the most amazing up close sensory experience. It's dribbling with caramelization.
And crackle?
It's got visible crackle underneath that ooziness. Yeah, there's so much you can do. And our team has done with pork and also with pie maker. In fact, I think some of our biggest pie maker recipes have been pork. So we definitely haven't been slack in putting pork right in the middle of it all.
Hey, Brodie, you mentioned that the vegan style and vegetarian style had peaked in 2019. Traditionally, meals were designed for dinner around meat and three veg, or around meat as the hero at least. So is that still the case for the dinner table?
I don't think people are necessarily saying what protein am I going to have as their first decision and then building the meal around that. And meat and three veg is definitely not a thing anymore, really.
Yeah.
The best way to think about it, I think, is more about the flavour profiles that people are going to go for. Their first decision is how long is it going to take and do I have the ingredients, to be quite honest. So trying to get into the middle of that and being that protein that they buy on their shop and having it in the fridge so that they go, I know I've got this beautiful piece of lean pork, what am I going to do with it? Can still happen, but I think it's getting on the consideration list and getting into the shop so that it's sitting there waiting for them. And then they'll be thinking about what flavour profile. Am I going to go Asian? Am I going to go a sticky pork? Or will I go a chow mein? So it's kind of getting into that. I think another good way of looking at it is in bowl foods, construction dishes, where most of the work is just in throwing things in. But the protein, like pork, can play this huge role in being the hero of the dish still, just as it was on that flat plate. But it's kind of maybe it's all beautiful and crispy. It can be bacon. Amazing. Put on top. And it's the thing that brings the family to the table, especially bacon. A lot of vegan mums are doing pure vegan dishes and throwing bacon on the top so that the whole family cheer it to the table, you know.
The meat and three veg thing, before you jump in, Mitch, you've prompted something in my mind because as someone that, you know, grew up with that and the last thing you do want nowadays, but when my kids who are teenagers go to my beautiful mother-in-law's place, she'll still cook them some pork sausages, some mash, and then some carrots and beans in buttery sauce, and they think that's an amazing treat nowadays.
It is a treat.
It is, actually. It's almost gone full circle, hasn't it, that it's like, wow, the nostalgia of it, because all these kids are so nostalgic now. It's like Nana food.
Yeah.
And also it was never – when it was done badly, it was so bad, but when it was done well, it's the best thing you could ever eat, you know. So
bangers and mash will never go to a fashion. When we're talking about pork, which we are, what are the sort of flavours that we need to be focusing on that are working well for pork? And is it like international-based cuisines? And also tie that to the air-fried pork belly.
Air fryer, yeah. Well, look, it's interesting because knowing that I was coming here, I thought I'd just find out what your top recipes were for the year. And I think this kind of does reveal a lot about how pork's being used. So pork used in our dim sim sausage rolls recipe, huge. Creamy chicken bacon and cauliflower bake recipe that had bacon in it, massive. A one pan cheese and bacon smothered chicken recipe. So sometimes it's actually you're doubling up with a chicken, which probably gives you that consideration, which is actually really interesting. And creamy chicken anything gets a lot of airplay. So Also things like pumpkin and bacon pasta with garlic crumbs. So there's another case of probably a vegetarian dish that bacon's jumping on with. Pea and ham soup, sanctuary bao. And then after that, they're all strong Asian flavoured recipes.
But Brodie, when you're talking about bacon being, you know, an additive or even heroing a lot of dishes, for us, one of the big issues is that there's a lot of bacon and ham made from imported pork. So how do we tackle that? We're continuously trying to tackle that. Do you get interest in the country of origin in your recipes? And do you specify that people should be looking out for that?
We have specified in some instances in the past, and I think it has never been more compelling Australian than it is now. One of our macro trends is nurture, and it's nurturing ourselves, nurturing people in our family, but it's also nurturing really holistically communities, farmers. And I must say, you know, I have been in the game for 15 years now. I've never seen Australian as such a trigger term for consumers as it is now. People are being forensic about their buying of things in the supermarket, looking at every label, every claim. So it's a great time, probably never been a better time to highlight that there is a difference. And I know it for myself when I eat it, a big difference between, you know, the local Australian pork, bacon, and what comes imported form. It's just, it's actually not even the same food.
Well, the colour looks so different too, I think. I'm always looking for that. That's a real standout, the beautiful colour of Australian bacon.
Correct.
Absolutely.
Where's pork at with consumers now? We certainly see in supermarkets that our sales are going up and have done ongoing for about 10 years. But, you know, you talked about some of those recipes. What does it mean to consumers? Where does it fit in their repertoire?
I often think of Homer Simpson, and you guys would know this, my favourite quote on The Simpsons, where he's actually, Lisa's saying she's given up meat, and he's like, giving up ham, giving up pork chops, giving up bacon, and she's like, Dad, they all come from the same animal. And he's like, sure, Lisa, the same wonderful, magical animal. And I think it actually really captures that people see pork in not necessarily as one thing, but they see it as everything, you know, all of those things separately probably. So what does it mean? I think it means it can be everywhere. It can be your finger food. It can be the simplest bacon and eggs for breakfast, but it can be your fanciest thing that you make all year, your pork, beautiful rolled pork roast for Christmas. So I think there's nothing that it can't be, really. You'd almost have to invent it if it didn't exist for its flexibility. And people are even using it in desserts, of course, with maple bacon dessert, with maple bacon as an addition there. So I think there's probably some work to do on the healthy aspect of pork because it's got way more to offer than most people realise. So probably that's the pain point as far as what does it mean to people. They don't automatically think healthy as much as they could or should, I think. And that's something that we should probably correct.
That dessert, you've reminded me of something with that dessert thought. I remember after one of our Australian Pork Board meetings in Melbourne, I can't remember which restaurant we went to. It might have been Palermo, but they brought out ice cream with tiny pieces of caramelised crackling on top of the ice cream, and it was so good.
Yum. Oh, that's magic. That is just so, and also you've got the heat and the cold and just incredible.
Touching on that unhealthy perspective, as an industry, how can we innovate to be more appealing and to shift into that healthy? Because we know the product's healthy, but it still has that stigma. But then we're talking about roast pork and crackling and bacon. So we've got so many platforms. So how do we get that healthy message across?
Yeah, well, I guess probably concentrating on the one that you want the healthy message to be around, obviously, because people love bacon and crackling because they're not healthy. We have this paradox, super healthy over here of the lean pork, which is like a powerhouse of vitamins and minerals and lean protein. And I don't think you want to confuse that. So if it was me, I'd really go to town on those comms around that lean pork, show them exactly what to buy and your Australian Pork logo, which means you're also helping farmers. I actually really liked your The Other White Meat campaign. I thought, you know.
My God, now you're showing your age, though.
It was very successful.
I just think it was so cool because you piggybacked onto what people, and there's a bit of a resistance towards red meat more than white meat in this move towards plant-based eating and flexitarianism. So, yeah, I think that was quite on the money myself.
I think when we ran those sorts of campaigns, they were highly successful, and a lot of our research shows that we are seen as, you know, as quite a good lean protein to have. But the other angle is obviously the environmental side of farming. And are you seeing much come out there? Because I know this younger generation coming through are really interested in the environment and animal welfare and all these sorts of important things.
Oh, absolutely. So that's, again, that macro trend of nurture that I was talking about. And we're seeing the perennials, the parents who are millennials, who are really rising consumers for family shopping in supermarket. They are very conscious of things like that. They're the forensic shopper as well, really. And I know you guys do a lot in this area. You're looking at a lot of water wastage and how you can minimize that. And you've really led in animal welfare, which actually just a couple of months ago, you probably saw it, a new study which showed 9 out of 10 Australians are concerned about animal welfare in farming, which is a massive figure. And so I think you're really on the front foot there, and staying there, I think, would make a lot of sense from what we can see over our side. Sustainability is just so important.
Well, I want to change gears from the healthy aspect right now, and I want to go forward to an area we touched on a little earlier. Christmas. Now, you have some of the most amazing Christmas publications, and I'd be curious to ask, what can we expect to see this year highlighted at Christmas?
Right. Well, we looked to the data as we always did, and then we just grabbed it and ran down the road and really tried to make it as cool as we possibly could. So the big one was brand new ways with mains, because we feel like we're seeing a lot of people just coming out of COVID and not wanting to do things the same way. So they're wanting kind of new approaches to things, and mains are a big one. They still want to have their ham, but they want to do it in a different way. Or we've mixed that up with salads, huge. We've put heaps of salads in and desserts. So they've been the three big focuses, but all of them we've been trying to find that new showstopper. That's kind of been our biggest focus, to be honest. Stuff that's really mixes it up.
Like the glazed ham being a showstopper, but also a roast loin of pork with crackle. Are they things that we can expect to see highlighted?
Yeah, totally. I can't tell you off the top of my head what they are, but yeah, they're there definitely. All the main events are there.
While we're on some of the publications, with the taste publications, you launched that very successful Dinner Revolution. Tell us a bit about that. What was the inspiration behind it? Why do you think it became so successful?
Well, we did a lot of research for starters, so that helped a lot. And we called it the Dinner Decoder, the National Dinner Decoder. I think it went to something like 5,000, 7,000 people, a real deep dive. And it was so interesting because they said the thing that stops them with dinner is their lack of energy. At the end of the day, they just have completely hit the wall, and any decision making around dinner, they just can't do it, which is what sends them off to, you know, off to the fast food joint. So that gave us a really good platform to go, all right, how do we take out all the pain from this? So we gave them tools so they could put in, you know, what they already have in the fridge. We gave them dinners. We knew what time they expected dinner to take, and we halved it and then created dishes like that, which was called Half the Time Meal Plan. Yeah, we gave them dinner for two people, because what it revealed was almost half the people are cooking for two people, not your traditional four. So it gave us a lot to play with, and we just basically delivered that. And, yeah, it went crazy, really. It's still very strong for us. It's a whole world in itself within taste now.
The whole subscription box piece is also, I mean, it's huge. And I think one of our challenges as an industry is how do we make sure pork is in there as well. I mean, what do you think some of the tips could be for us? And maybe it is around recipes you talked about earlier. How do we make sure we get our fair share of pork in those sort of
in that consideration pile? Yeah, look, I think one of the things that, and I know Mitch has worked really hard on this, is education of the people who are making the decisions. And I think that's key, really, just making sure that the people, and that's why he's got, I don't think there's a single food journalist in Australia that hasn't had their brain washed by Mitch.
Yay.
And, you know.
Relentlessness.
Relentless. He stalks us, he tracks us down. But that, to be honest, that's part of it, is making sure that you know who those decision makers are on those platforms, and just making them aware, because pork will speak for itself. It's one of those magic animals that, that once you know, you can't change the shape of your brain back to where it was, because, you know, it's, you understand and you know that people need it. And I think, yeah, it can include great education pieces about how to, what flavour profiles and how quickly it can cook and things like that. That's one way. Consumer demand, I guess, is the other way. And having great examples that you can push out to, if you can have one advocate, maybe the others will say, hey, we better get on board with that ourselves. I know YouFoods has good pork that my dad loves. He has those.
Yeah, it does, yeah. You at taste.com have a huge TikTok following. So with the number of videos going viral, can you talk to us about the importance of TikTok in today's digital world and why our industry and our producers should be using the platform?
Look, TikTok is an essential. We didn't really, I'd really? Like to say, yeah, I think so. I didn't know how important it was at first. Our team were kind of, let's go. And so we were early adopters, and it's really paid off for us. But it's, look, it's where a lot of excitement around food happens, a lot of interaction. And it's just, look, it's also really important, I think, to future-proof yourself with your new audiences, because these guys, they're, even I was listening to a chick on the radio, a girl who's going to a formal, and they said, what music are you going to listen to? And she just went, TikTok. And these people are going to be parents in like 5 or 6 years' time. So to be on there and to be in the consideration funnel, I think is really important. Plus, you can have so much fun with it. It doesn't cost a lot of money, is another good reason to be involved. In fact, high production often doesn't do as well. You don't have to, it's not like Instagram or Facebook where you have to be a mega
influencer.
Celebrity. Yeah, influencer. You can start making, we've had like 2 million views even before we even had a lot of traction. And there's lots of tricks to doing it well, but none of them are expensive and most of them are creative. So, yeah, I just think it's an essential.
On the flip side, what about Instagram? Where does that fit into the picture now for
you? Oh, definitely. We love Instagram as well. So Instagram Reels and TikTok are our big video plays, and we're now just refreshing our YouTube play as well, which we haven't been on the forefront with, to be honest, because it hasn't really fit us until now, but now we're seeing the value of that evergreen content. I think a lot of that is because how-to content, and I would say for you guys.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Particularly around the recipe and the preparation at home, that's where you see, you know, people with the iPad sitting there on their counter watching a YouTube video, or if it's my 14-year-old daughter, it's watching the TikTok to figure out what to do.
But TikTok must be growing up, though, because, Billy, it's only, you say, 14-year-old daughter. I kept being told that I need to get on a TikTok. Instagram's not enough. It does my head in.
It's
you can repurpose a lot of your existing content for TikTok as well. So that's another option. But yeah, it's a definite. It's a got to be there. And also, you're learning so much about ASMR, which you probably like pork. And ASMR, which is that sensory experience when you hear a noise like a crackling or somebody.
Yeah.
You know, it actually sends off this experience, this full body experience. It starts in your scalp and runs down, and they are playing with that, and pork is natural for that, like the crackling, the pork belly. This is something that you could totally milk on that space, and it just gets so much traction. So you've got a bit of a head start there.
And what about our dining in versus dining out culture in Australia? We were all dining out, and then we got so used to eating at home over the COVID lockdowns. What do you think we can expect to see in change in that arena? Or are we going to go back to dining out, or are we going to be eating at home continuously?
I think we'll definitely be eating out. I couldn't wait to go and eat out. However, I think there was a big change, a big step change in eating in. You guys probably got onto the Provador thing of buying, you know, complete beautiful menus that you just do a little zhuzh at home, you know, and then you've got your own music, you've got your own house, which you probably made even better while you've been in COVID. And there's something beautiful about having a special night like that where you don't have to think, how am I going to get home? You know, all of that sort of stuff. So I think we'll probably land somewhere in between where we've been and where we were, I think, yeah.
Now, one last question that we have been asking everybody, and we've touched on a lot of social media today, but what content or influential people do you follow that our listeners might want to follow to stay ahead of the game?
Oh, well, I usually follow websites that are of the Northern Hemisphere because I want to know what's going to be happening next year. So most of my time is spent on New York Times cooking, Bon Appetit. I've got to say, like, I roam around TikTok madly, but don't follow anyone there too much. Oh, you know, obviously people like Matt Preston and Maren Grasby, who we work with a lot. I love Colin Fastnich.
So do we.
Manu. He's so good.
Colin who? Colin who?
He'll get you for that, Mitch.
So, yeah, these are people in our kind of family. But apart from that, I just roam. I'm a roamer.
Well, thank you so much, Brodie. You've given us some incredible insight into food and the future of food, particularly when it comes to what we're creating on our plates and also what we can expect in our restaurants coming up. So there you have it, another great episode of Next on the Menu. Thanks, obviously, of course, to our guest today, Brodie Myers-Cook, to my co-host, Mitch Edwards, our producers, Boyd Britton and Ashley Gray, our researcher, Andrea Zanatta. And of course, this podcast can be found on all good podcast networks such as Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And you can also find Next on the Menu across all Australian Pork social channels or at australianpork.com.au. And of course, we'd love it if you'd leave us a bit of a review or comment as well. That's it for this episode of Next on the Menu. See you next time.